This is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. Today, the many facets of Gene Mangan as we visit his special places in Killoglan, guided by his friend and fellow biker, John Mangan. In this first hour, across the road from Bunkers, Father Ted Mangan's pub, the family home, where Gene's sister Jill said he wasn't allowed to work. Although he lived in Dublin for some 70 or 80 years, first and last, he was a Killoglan man. Being expelled from school in Killoglan, got his first racing bike to cycle to school in Tralee. Pa Grady remembers, after cycling across the parapet of Killoglan Bridge, a career with AIB, with Maeve O'Doherty from Glenbey, had a family of six, Niamh, Sheena, Deirdre, Owen, Orla and Cullum. And to begin, in the square of Killoglan, where in early August 1955, a few days before his 19th birthday, he was and still is the youngest ever winner of the Ross Tarleton. Today's programme is recorded on the streets of Killoglan on February the 27th. Your story on the many sides of Gene Mangan. Write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 7123 666. As I said, we're in the middle of the square in Killoglan and you can hear all of the traffic on this kind of busy morning. As I said, we're beginning in the square in the school where Gene was welcomed home as the youngest ever winner of the Ross Tarleton in 55 at the age of 18. We're joined by Pat Healy. Pat, a leading Irish cyclist in the late 70s and early 80s, won the first Mast Start Championship of 1979 and was named to the Irish squad for the 1980 Moscow Olympics. John, the Ross, heard to the 11th of August 1955, 5 days before his 19th birthday. Have you a memory of that event?
I remember in 67, all right, or 66, we went into Killarney to actually see the stage, yeah, and that was the first time I met Gene, yeah.
Yeah, but what was the story about the 55 Ross that you particularly remember?
I would have heard it off of Paddy Callaghan, yeah, because yeah. Himself and Paddy were great friends and they'd be half the time fighting. And,
they were, in fact, just across the road from us here, Paddy had a bicycle shop one time.
Yeah.
And I remember Paddy telling me that Gene, he had sold Gene a bicycle.
Yes.
And Gene wasn't happy with it.
Gene
had the frame of the bike,
yeah.
And on cycling up the street here, and fired the frame into the bicycle shop. And
yeah.
Paddy told him if he was in the way, he would have taken the head off him.
Yeah, yeah.
A symbol of the temper of the man. No.
Yeah. There's been nothing new.
Yeah. In 55, Pat, your story of Gene's win in the 1955 Ross.
55 was the second 8-day Ross, and the Ross developed because of the NCAA were banned from international competition in 49. They had been the controlling body on the auspices of the GAA. CRE people, to get international competition, they formed the CRE, which then became the ICF. So to provide better competition and retain the good riders to prevent them from jumping ship, the NCAA launched the Ross under Joe Crystal. It was very forward-thinking. They tried the two-day Dublin to Wexford, which was successful. Then he went for the eight-day against the advice of everybody. He said, that can't happen. Our riders aren't fit for it. 54 went ahead with the eight-day. It was a roaring success. And then come 55. Gene didn't come into 55 in the best of shape by his own assessment.
Why? What was wrong?
He'd been working in England and training and doing a little competition in England, but he was quite fit. He wanted to win. He always did. Dan Heron won the first stage. It was a great success for the Kerry lads. They had a strong team. They had Paddy Fitzgerald, Paddy Callaghan, Johnny Switzer, Gene Mangan, Dan Heron, Jackie O'Connor.
So did the Kerry team also win that Ross?
The Kerry team won the Ross as well that year. But the pivotal time was towards the end because Steve Abbott and Gene Mangan had a running battle for a lot of their careers. Abbott won Stage 5 and became race leader. Stage 7 and a break went clear. But about 30 miles ago, Gene gave chase. A violent attack that Abbott couldn't answer. And he caught the break. And
so even at 18, he was a tactician.
Yeah, he won the stage and took over the race lead. The final day, he just had two people to watch that were close. Frank Ward, who had been a race leader earlier in the week, and Mick Palmer from Mayo, and Palmer finished second. And Gene had little enough trouble with his strong team to control them.
John, in 1955, Kerry won the All-Ireland, but yet Gene Mangan was that year presented with the Bishop Moynihan Cup as the Kerry Sportsperson of the Year. John, as you say, you were 6 years old. It was a measure of the superstar status of Gene, the huge media attention, the great crowds that came out. The fact that he got that kind of attention in the year when Kerry won the All-Ireland was amazing, wasn't it?
I suppose in those days, there was massive crowds came out to watch the stadiums. You could have 20,000, 30,000 in some places, especially at the finish in the park. There could be 40,000, yeah. You wouldn't see that now, hardly, at a World Championship. I suppose football wasn't a very, very big thing in those days, so the press followed cycling a lot, like, yeah.
Really was superstar stuff. Pat, it wasn't until the advent of Sean Kelly and Stephen Rowe that cycling got the same attention again.
No, as John said there, the finish of the Ross in Tralee had over 20,000 people. That's a stage, and the finish in Dublin would have around 40,000 back in those days. Gene would have been the first superstar of cycling then in Ireland. We had some great domestic track men like Bertie Donnelly, Al O'Donegan, and those people. They were kind of hero worship, but they weren't roadmen.
So it didn't get the public attention.
They didn't get the same kind of attention as these Ironmen of the road.
John, what was your memory of your first meeting with Gene?
I suppose it was a stagent of the Ross in Killarney. That stage was from Limerick someplace. And now Gene won the stage, and there was around the houses that night. So we went in to watch that, yeah. And at the time, I used to be doing a bit of cross-country running with Charlie Shea. And he would have known Gene, so he introduced me to Gene. That's where our friendship started, yeah.
In 66, you think, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, in 66, yeah.
You weren't doing any cycling at that stage?
No, I wasn't. I'd been cycling to school and things like that.
Indeed,
that's
right.
All, yeah. I didn't really start until 67, yeah.
Yeah. Pat, your own cycling experience that you'll never forget.
As Gene was getting older, I was coming into the game. One particular incident, anyway, that I will never forget, could have been unhappy. My first Ross, 69, the roads of Kerry at the time were fairly backward. We left Dublin and the stage went through Dundalk. There's a steep road into Drogheda. I was riding at the outside of the bunch and I got grabbed from the inside and pulled to the left. It was Gene. There was a traffic bollard. I never saw a traffic bollard in my life here in Kerry. That saved my life, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, yeah. It certainly saved your getting out of the Ross fairly quickly.
Very quickly. And generally, we had no traffic bollards at Tralee, Killarney, anywhere back in 69.
He was that kind of person, though, wasn't he? He was constantly looking out for other people as well as himself.
He was always thinking of others, yeah. One of the most generous people on the bike, provided you weren't a competitor of his. Well, so many things. Whenever you needed a bike, you rang in. Any chance, Gene, that you'd find a bike? We being young fellas thinking, well, he has no more to do now, and I'll look for a bike for me, forgetting that he has half a dozen kids and a very important job. And, the bike would arrive, and you'd pay a very small amount of money for it by the standard of what you were getting, value for money. You knew it was going to be perfect because it came from Gene Mangan. Training with him was always a pleasure. There's so many memories, we're just running out of time.
Indeed, indeed. Going back to that first memory, John, of 1966, the criterium, the round of houses was huge.
What was it?
It attracted enormous attention.
It'd be up on 30,000 people there in Killarney at the round of houses, yeah. As Pat said earlier on in Tralee, there could be 20,000, but I mean, when it was around the houses, there'd be was it 25 or 30 laps, so they're all going to see that. Like,
do you remember anything particularly about that?
A fella on the bike, he was fairly shrewd. He wouldn't kill himself at the front of the bunch. He'd be well rested for a sprint. Nobody would pass him in a sprint in those days, yeah.
That was his strength?
It was, yes.
That and his ability as a tactician, he knew what he wanted to do and he knew how to do it.
Well, he did. He had a fair idea of what every fella had been capable of doing on the bike. He'd know that one fella, for example, he wouldn't have been a great climber, or another fella, he wouldn't have been faster at time trials. He had a great knowledge of that, yeah.
Yeah. Pat, is there a memory of Gene that immediately comes to mind when you think of him?
When I won the National Championship, he was the first man to come up and congratulate me. He was on the street that day, so that's a fond memory I have.
So he was good to praise others?
Always, yeah.
No, Gene liked the winner. I remember when I went to Dublin first, if I wasn't placed in a race, somebody would ask, being the same name, are we cousins? And he'd say, no. But if I was in the first three, well, he's my cousin.
It's a far out cousin, though, no?
Oh, very far out, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same name. That's about it, yeah.
Yeah. Pat, you're going to join us again later.
Yes.
We're going to move on. I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride my bike. The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee. I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride my bike. Jean Mangan's special places in and around Killoglan and his very full 88 years, guided by fellow biker and friend John Mangan. Now we're across the road from Bunker's Bar and Restaurant. Well, it was Ted Mangan's pub where Jean was born on the 10th of August 1936, Puck Fair's Day, I'm told, where he and his sister Colette and Jill lived their growing up years. I'm joined by Jean's sister Jill. Jill, Jean, you say, was never allowed to work in the bar. Why?
No, because he was a bit fiery and my mother was always afraid he'd start an argument with somebody.
Or was it that she was spoiling him?
Oh, she spoiled him completely. He was the only boy. He was the white-haired boy. We all did things for Jean.
I see.
Yeah, ironing his shirts and doing everything for him.
For all of his life?
Until he got married.
And Maeve took over then?
No, she didn't. She said, you can iron your own shirts now, boy.
We're in the new square in Killoglan and the traffic behind us, you can hear, is still very busy. Jean was 7 years older than you. He was just a year older than your sister, Colette. Jean, he always referred to you as the baby, which caused some confusion among Jean's Dublin friends.
It did. The first time they met me, they couldn't believe it. They thought I was a baby. Yeah. They said, are you the baby sister?
What age were you at this stage?
I suppose I was about 10 or 11 at this stage. And he would have been about 18 or 19, you know.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe that I was the baby.
John, growing up in Killoglan in the 1950s, is there a particular memory that stands out for you?
I suppose in those days, more so football. I was still involved in cycling. We didn't do that until late. And cross-country running as well.
Cross-country running and football. Are we any good at either of those?
Well, I was. I have won the medals, one in cross-country, and I have county medals in football, yeah. Okay. I was handy enough.
Across all sports then?
Yeah.
Was there a particular memory of any of that?
In football, winning the Mid-Kerry Leagues.
Winning Kerry Leagues, and he dismisses it as if it was nothing like.
That's a long time ago, 60-something years ago. Yeah.
Jill, Puck Fair wasn't something you looked forward to?
No, because it was very hard work. My mother used to always close it about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and reopen it about 8, but a lot of the pubs stayed open all the time.
Did you exclude the people who were inside, or did you keep them there during those 5 hours when the pub was closed?
Oh God, no. There was cleaning up time. You cleaned up everything and you got ready for opening and you got a few hours sleep. But it was hard work. My father used to always say it was the thing that kept the business going for the rest of the year. Massive business at the time.
So do you still have nightmares then about being in the middle of Puck Fair?
No, I enjoy it now. I'm living outside the town now and I can walk down and walk around and enjoy it.
But you served your time there.
I served my time there, as did Declan indeed, because Declan used to work in the shop with us as well. Declan, my cousin Declan Mangan, who's here. We used to get all the neighbours involved. They'd all come in and help out.
What was it like in the pub on a fair day?
Very busy. I can remember when I was growing up, walking down to school on a fair day, you'd be walking through the cattle. And I used to be quite nervous, I must admit, because I wasn't too happy walking. But the town would be packed with animals in those days.
But did you have trouble keeping the place clean during the fair day?
Yes, and the council didn't clean the streets afterwards, so it was up to the locals to clean in front of their own street. My mother would be out with the hose cleaning.
But the animals used to be on the street in front of your place here, yes?
On the street and down the street and all over the town. They were everywhere. They'd be packed into the town.
So was cow dung a problem?
Major problem. It was, certainly. Yeah. And a neighbour of ours, Maura Tobin, the Lord of Mercy, and her, she came out of her kitchen one day and there was an animal walking in her hallway to her.
Serious?
Yeah,
John, was Jean involved in getting you your first job?
Back in 67 or 68, he asked me if I wanted to go to Dublin. His brother-in-law, Mr. Egan, he was working in Unidare. So I started my apprenticeship first in Liebers in Killarney. And after about 6 months, I was sick of it there because there wasn't much cycling here in Kerry. And all the cycling was in Dublin. I said to him, OK, if you find me a place in Unidare, so I'll go up. He did. And then he found me digs in Brian Doherty's, Maeve's brother's place. That's how I started off in Dublin, yeah.
So he was involved with your cycling.
Yeah.
He helped to get you a job.
Yeah, correct.
And he put you up in digs.
Yeah. He found me digs with his brother-in-law, yeah.
At that stage on the cycling, what was it like?
We'd be racing in the summertime and you have 4 days a week. You'd be racing Saturday and Sunday and then you'd be in the Phoenix Park on the Tuesday night and Thursday night, yeah. We used to all of us train together, like, yeah.
What was that like?
It was good, yeah. We were two different type of cyclists. Gene was totally different to me, like, yeah.
In what way?
We were the roadmen more, so Gene would be very fast for a sprint, whereas I'd be the fella for the long haul, yeah.
So different tactics. He wasn't trying to mislead you? That.
Oh, God, no. No, he wouldn't do that at all, yeah.
Jill, you spent your working life with Air Rianta at Shannon Airport. Is there a Gene story from those years?
There isn't really, because at that stage he had got married and he wasn't cycling really competitively. He didn't cycle competitively really after that. What time did you cycle in the Ross, John?
72.
Yeah. That was his last Ross,
that
it, yeah?
That was his last Ross. So I didn't go to Shannon until 68. He cycled all the time, but not competitively.
Yeah.
I suppose most of his cycling, that he won all the championships, the 100-mile championship, 5-mile championship and track races. He actually won a track race, which was most unusual, like 5 kilometre, 5 mile or something, a grass track, which was very unusual. He set up a record in one of those races. It stood for about 30 years, if I remember correctly, and the man that actually broke it came to me in Jean's funeral, and he introduced himself to me, and he told me about it, and he said, "I'm the man that broke his record." And he said the first person to come over to congratulate me that day was Gene. But he said that was the measure of the men.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
That was Gene Altidore, yeah.
He was a track man. And
he was a great track man, yeah. He was better and more famous as a track man than a road man, I'd say, yeah.
That was among bikers, though, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, a fixed wheel. There was no brakes or gears in the bikes in those days. But a lot of it was in the grass in the late 60s. I suppose it would have been a lot in the Eamon Ken Stadium in Dublin and things like that. So we used to train together there as well. When I broke the old record, he made out a schedule. There was three different times, covered the maximum in 1 hour. I broke all three, yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't think I would.
Till, although Gene spent most of his life living in Dublin, he was always a Killorgan man.
Killorgan through and through. If you asked Gene where he was from, if you met him for the first time, he'd say Killorgan. And he'd explain then that it was in Kerry. Absolutely, this is where he was from. As soon as he was able, he got a house here when the kids were small. And he built a bigger one up near me when they got bigger. He'd come down 3 or 4 times a year, just himself come down and spend a few days around meeting people, talking to them. He loved Killorgan, he really did. And loved the people of this town.
Over all the years he kept contact?
All the years, right up to the time of COVID. And of course, that put an end to his coming down. And then he was quite ill for quite a while after that. So he never got down after that. And it was a great regret to him. He used to miss coming to Kerry. And every year he'd say, "I think I might chance it this year." But he never did.
My. John, did Killorgan mean as much to you as it did to Jean?
I suppose it probably did, yeah. I came back from France and stayed here in Killorgan, yeah. I could have stayed in France, but I mean, there's no place like your home, yeah.
What is it about Killorgan that...
People are different here.
In what way?
In those days, anyway. Now, it's a little bit different because you have so many people in here, nationalities and everything. So, the olden days, everyone knew each other. Now you hardly know your next-door neighbour.
Yeah, true everywhere, isn't it?
It is.
Jill, in those years with Arianta and Shannon, all of the 33 years you were there, were you also coming back to Killorgan very regularly?
Practically every weekend. My mother was alive until 92. She was living up in Sunhill on her own, and I'd like to keep her company, but I loved coming home. I just loved coming back to Killorgan. And the minute I retired, straight down here, that was it.
Was it? No doubt about it.
They said to me the day I was leaving, I was a member of the golf club in Shannon as well, and when I was leaving they had a bit of a presentation to me, and they said, "She's heading off down to the kingdom where she always lived anyway."
Yeah? Even though you were saying to me you hugely enjoyed your years.
I loved Shannon. I loved it and I loved working there, and I still have great friends there. But Killorgan was home.
What was it about Killorgan? What is it about Killorgan?
The native loves his native land, doesn't he? And whatever it was about Killorgan, I just love Killorgan. I could never imagine myself retiring anywhere else.
You're going to stay with us, and we're going to go up in front of the school, and we'll talk there in a few minutes. I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride my bike. The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie. I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride my bike. Dean Mangan's special places in Killorgan. As you can hear, the church bell is ringing in the background there. School years. Today's programme is recorded on February the 27th for later use. Your story on Gene, his places, and on the other guests on the programme. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 71 23666. I'm now outside. It used to be the old Killoglan National School, and now is Killoglan Pantomime used the spaces here. The Redeemed Christian Church of God have a place here. The KDYS have a place here. Killoglan Community Council, and so on, all sorts of places. Jill, that 7-year gap between you and Jean, you don't have a particular memory of Jean at National School. Was there a story that you heard?
I suppose I heard lots of stories. Some of them I couldn't repeat.
Go on.
No, certainly one of them I couldn't know. Don't really remember an awful lot about Jean. We used to swim up the banks of the river, and the little small river. Was that the Cottoners, John?
Yeah.
And there was a lovely pool. We used to swim there, and one of the people from Killoglan, they were known as the Sturdy Foleys, one of them got into difficulty there, and he was drowning, and Jean was a very good swimmer, and he actually pulled him out.
My.
He was very athletic always. The bike, of course, was always the big thing.
Was he involved in other sports?
He did play a little bit of football when he was younger, but he really had no interest in it at all. Bike. He loved to swim. One of the reasons he loved coming to Kerry, he loved Rossby.
Yeah.
He'd head for there for his swim straight away, or Cremorne, either of the two of them. He loved both of them.
John, in primary school years, you were very keen on football, as you were telling me earlier. But
that's right.
You were into cycling as well. I mean, you were cycling to football and...
Well, I was, yeah. I suppose how I got involved a small little bit in cycling was when we'd be cycling back to the track from the take above, that I could bring a fella in the handlebars and I'd still beat the other fellas back there, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
It started from there, really.
Yeah. Jill, at secondary school, Jean had a falling out with the school principal.
He was cycling down the hill in Killoglan, which we called Cunnacona Gap, but they call it Upper Bridge Street or something now. He was taking the bank corner very sharp and he nearly knocked down a certain lady who complained about him. When he went into school the following day, he got a bit of a bollocking, I think, from the schoolmaster, and he refused to apologise. And he came home and he said, I'm not going back to that school. And no way, he wasn't going back, and he never did go back to it.
So what happened?
He decided he wasn't going to go back. No way he wasn't going to go back. He said he'd go to Tralee to school. My father bought a bike for him that he could cycle into Tralee, a reasonably good bike, but it wouldn't have been a good racing bike. But he cycled in and out to school, I think maybe for only about a year or more. And then he came back and he went to the technical school in Killoglan. And that's where he finished off his secondary education. He loved there, actually. He was very happy there.
Had he started cycling at that stage?
Oh, he had, yeah. He had. Yeah.
Competitively, I mean.
Yeah, he was very young, I think, when he won his first race, and that was down in Kenmare, if my memory serves me correct. And it was Jackie O'Shea of Killoglan brought him down there. Jackie was his mentor, and Jackie had a bike shop down at the bottom of the town. He took Jean under his wing. That was a relationship up to the day Jackie died, and Jackie's wife is still alive, and they're friends.
We're going to talk to Mary later.
Jackie was very much a part of his life.
Yeah.
Brought him to all the races.
John, do you have a memory of your own education after primary school?
I went to the Tech here in Killoglan. We used to cycle back and I'd be bringing a fella up on the handlebars or else the bar. Mm-hmm. And we used to be racing the lads, yeah. But we used to also do that when we were coming home from Kilgoblin National School. So there'd be fellas that could be 2 or 3 years older than me, and I'd hold my own with them, yeah.
The national school you went to was in Kilgoblin.
Great.
How far was that from home?
It was 2.5 miles. In the early days, we used to cycle up there. We'd go across the fields. Yeah. It was only just about a mile across the fields when we went to third or fourth class. We got bikes, yeah.
Are you really a Kilgoblin man then, rather than a Killoglan man?
Oh, we are, yeah. There's my mother over that. They wanted me to play with Killoglan. I always played with Beaufort, and I stayed with Beaufort, yeah. Because we're in Beaufort Parish.
Is Kilgoblin in Beaufort Parish?
Oh, it is, yeah. It is, yeah.
Oh, in Beaufort Parish, of course, yeah.
Beaufort Parish. If you come back here from Maynard's Cross down to Killoglan, there's a bridge there. That's where the parish is split, yeah.
Jill, you became an archivist of the Jean Mangan story.
Oh, I did. When I was very young, I was just at the right age to know what he was achieving. And I was very proud of him. So I started collecting everything that was written about him Monday morning. As soon as I came back from school, I went through all the papers and cut out all the little bits that he had won the day before or whatever he had done. And I started pasting them into with big ledgers at home in the shop. And I kept those, certainly up to the 60s and maybe a little bit later. And I thought they were gone. It never dawned on me they were still there. But Jean had them in Dublin, in fact. He showed them to Tom Daly. Oh, God, he said, they're very valuable. make sure you do something with those. And Tom actually arranged for them to be presented to the Kerry Museum in Tralee. Mm-hmm. Jean sent them down to me and I did the presentation, and that's where they are now. They were delighted to get them. Mm-hmm. Because it was a record of every race he ever won, or didn't.
How did you have access to all the papers?
Because we had a pub. We used to buy the Independent always, but also maybe the Cork Examiner. Neighbours would have the Irish Press, and if there was something in them, I'd make sure I'd get them. Like,
and the Kerryman, of course.
And the Kerryman, of course, when it came out, absolutely, yeah. There's a record of every race he ever raced in that, actually.
Are there particular memories from all of those races?
He certainly won Ross Moon and Ross Ulla, I think, as well. He got medals and cups for all of these, and they were on display in our sitting room, and I used to polish them, keep them nice and shiny. I have actually had a photograph of the whole lot of them.
Did you resent when they went away from Killoglan then?
Into Tralee.
Or into Dublin? Did they not go to Jean's home?
I didn't even know they were there. When we sold the house below, we disposed of an awful lot of stuff because we were moving into a much smaller house.
So you thought that you'd thrown out Jean's cups and medals?
Oh no, the cups and medals, Jean had all those. He had all those.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to polish them anymore, which was great.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them were put into storage for a while, because I don't think Maeve had time with six children to do too much polishing of them.
They're a valuable record now though, aren't they? Great momentum.
Well, all his medals, he decided about 3 or 4 years ago that he would give them to the family. So we all got some of his medals. In a way, I think it was a pity. I think it would be far better if they were all kept together. Yeah. And I'm trying to get that done, because I think it would be far better if they were all in one place.
Yeah.
They'll be lost otherwise, you know.
John, was anybody giving you the same sort of attention? Nobody was cutting out all the pieces from the papers? Or...
No. Even in France, I have very, very few cuttings. I doubt if I have even 3 photographs of racing in France. Oh. I never kept nothing, The way I used to look at it, it was a day's work. I'm sorry, no, I should have kept those things. I'd get the odd one out from a few old friends at St. De La Crosse. They have a thing in France, cyclists from the past. An ex-girlfriend of mine, she sends over stuff nearly every month.
So she's an ex-girlfriend, but she keeps in touch?
Yeah. Her brothers had been professional cyclists.
Oh, yeah?
Monty, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And was it that she wouldn't come to Kerry or you wouldn't stay in France?
Oh, she comes here sometimes, yeah.
Oh, does she?
Yeah. And so her husband as well, yeah.
There's still a flame there.
Well, friends. The husband comes as well,
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Spoiled sport.
Yeah.
Jill Fucklescour, a final Jean Mangan story.
The last story. What story would I tell about him? God. I suppose what I would just say personally, he was a wonderful brother. He was very caring of all of us.
Is there a particular example that stands out for you?
I bought a car last year for the first time in my life, because Jean arranged all the cars I had from the day I started driving up to then. I wouldn't necessarily have to ring him. Sometimes he'd ring me and he'd say, Jill, I have a lovely car here and it would suit you. And he'd bring it down to Kerry. All the paperwork done. He'd hand me the keys and he'd drive the old one away. I never had to do a thing. If I had any problem, if I really felt I needed a bit of advice, he was the person I'd go to. He really was a great brother.
He was a great businessman as well as a great...
He was a great businessman. He had great friends from Hire Purchase Company of Ireland and Allied Irish Finance, because that's he retired from there. Friends that he kept all his life from the cycling world and from the business world. He was a special boy.
Some memory, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
How would you like to see him remembered in Killoglan?
There was great talks of having the roundabout down here at the bottom of the hill called the Jean Mangan Roundabout. Evidently, they are making arrangements to see if they can get permission to do so, and I hope they will manage to do that. Mm-hmm. It would be very nice. It's in front of the house that he was born in. It's in a town he loved.
How would you think he should be remembered, John?
I suppose, if they had a plaque someplace for him, like as Jill says, if they'll call the roundabout below there, the Jean Mangan Roundabout, that'd be two things, yeah. They can choose whichever one they want.
Jill, thanks indeed for talking to me.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
Jean Mangan's special places around Killoglan to tell Jean's story, guided by fellow biker and fellow Killoglan man, John Mangan. Now on the southwestern corner of the bridge, on the bank of the Lown, the way out of Killoglan, to talk about life in Dublin, where Jean lived for most of his life, joined by a neighbour, Pa Grady, who worked with Jean in Allied Irish Finance. Jean's sister, Jill, told me working hire purchase, a car had to be repossessed. Jean evidently was in digs with Tom Long and Kevin Coffey, two big Kerry footballers, two big men. Jean suggested they go to the pitchers. He had a car. Then on the way, he suggested they take a detour. He went and he knocked on the door. Evidently, he was going to repossess a car, but I suppose he felt that nobody would refuse to return the car when they saw the backup he had. Pai, you say roguery is your first word to describe Jean. Can you match Jill's story?
Without a shadow of a doubt, you could tell a lot of them. I don't know whether they'd all be true or not. Jean joined a company called Hire Purchase Company of Ireland in 1958. 1966, that company became Allied Irish Finance. Jean rose with the company when it started off. There was only two reps in the country. Jean was the rep for Southern Ireland. A fella called Brod MacHale was the rep for Northern Ireland. The company was owned by Manoj Driscoll, who Jean became very friendly with. Now, around 1966, the amalgamation of the Royal Bank of Ireland, the Provincial Bank and the Munster and Leinster Bank. When that was being amalgamated, the three chief executives were being driven around the country, and the driver of that car was a fella called Jean Mangan. As we stand here outside James Coffey's, a famous night coming from Cahill's after a celebration. Yeah. But Jean and James Coffey were particular good friends, but characters in their own right. One a GA man, one a cyclist. But the boys decided at some hour of the morning to jodden to Coffey's bar and had a bit of a session. I was in England at the time, but the following weekend I was home, and Jean's mother called me and she says, "I've a message from my son." And I said, "Mrs. Mangan, what's that?" She said, "He was in town the last night at the early hours of the morning, and James Coffey is after arriving up to me with a see-through bag with a pair of socks inside it." So I had the lovely privilege of going to Jean afterwards and said, "Mr. Mangan, you left something in Killoglan after you in the early hours of the morning, and by the way, your mother has just been made aware of it."
We're looking up at the parapet of the bridge there.
The parapet of the Lowndes, from what I can believe, at least this is one of his stories, of riding a bicycle all the length of the way. And I said to him when he told me this story, I said, "Did you ever fear about falling off?" "The only time I've fear about falling off," he says, "was over at the fishery."
Indeed. John, you were with Jean in Dublin.
I was, yeah.
A lot of bikers stayed in Mangan's in Dublin.
If they stayed in Mangan's, they'd be only just for the few nights. He had a young family of six kids. He'd always find fellas digs. When I was there first for a while, I was with Seamus Kennedy. And then I was with Jean's brother-in-law then. I got a flat there, yeah.
How many years were you in Dublin?
I was 4 years in Dublin, yeah.
4 years.
As an apprentice electrician. Then yeah, we struck for France.
Pa, very loyal to his friends, as you've said. A great help in any kind of trouble.
The way he approached cycling, yeah, I would say I wouldn't have been involved in cycling with him. Everything would be planned out to a T. As a banker, and that he had a great set of ears for listening when there was trouble about. And he was one of these guys within the bank. All the senior bank officials went to him. There was one particular situation of a guy leaving Dublin, and the only part of his security that was not perfected for the bank was his signature. Jean was given the job with another man called Paddy Wallace to go and trace him in South Africa. I was in London at the time. Jean came in the door and said, "Grady, come on, out." And I says, "Jesus, Jean, where are you going?" Now, he had cotton wool in the ears, and the reason he had cotton wool in the ears, Jean had the fierce fear of flying. They eventually headed for South Africa, and they were there about 3 or 4 days, and they were getting nowhere, couldn't find your man or anything else. And next thing he said to Paddy one day, "Paddy, you know," he says, "I've a relation here, a nun. I think we'll go and visit her." Let's say, for argument's sake, the person he was looking for was Murphy. Jean went to visit this nun. They were talking away for about half an hour, an hour. Next thing, Jean said, "I better go away, I have a bit of work to do." He said, "By any chance, would you know a sitcher fella in South Africa?" "Oh, yes," she says, "I do. His kids are in school with us." as Jean tells it. It was great Grady, he says, after 4 days we found him, got the signature, and we had a holiday for the rest of the 2 weeks.
Fantastic, fantastic. John, as we said already, as far as Jean was concerned, Killorgan was the centre of the world.
Well, it was. He loved Killorgan, yeah, up to the day he died.
Pa, one story that sums up working with Jean for you.
He went to the Tech. He was asked to write a composition called My Teacher. And his neighbour was a man called Massey Roach, who was principal of the technical school in Killorgan. Mm-hmm. Jean's mother and father owned a pub called The Bakery, which was right beside Roach's premises in the top of the town, where all of us lived as neighbours, really. But anyway, Jean wrote the composition telling the story about my teacher, Massey, and that there was a little nook at the back of Massey's house leading onto Mangan's Bar at night, and that his teacher would always knock on the little window to get his pint out. So, you see, that was just typical of the character of Jean.
Why was he such a great person to buy a car from?
Because for the simple reason, there were a lot of repossessed cars that were either out in hire purchase or out in leasing and stuff like that. And he had almighty contacts with garages all over the country. Mm-hmm. And you see, you must remember the banks weren't doing car loans that time. It was hire purchase companies that were doing it. Then it was finance companies. Mm. And Jean decided even to buy a property in Dublin for the bank. And they used that as a repossession yard. Jean yearly would at least sell maybe 10 or 12 cars into people in Killorgan, the surrounding areas. He had contacts all over the place. Mm. And you know, the people he surrounded himself with as well in that job, there was an ex-cyclist called Eugene Keogh, of Jerry Keogh, sorry. There was Seamus Kennedy, another cyclist.
Were all of the cars he was selling repossessed cars?
No, a lot of these cars, you know, whilst they would be repossessed, they'd be handed back as well when people couldn't afford to keep the cars and stuff like that. But it wasn't only cars. It was trucks, it was lorries. It was equipment. There was a lot of leasing on equipment and stuff like that as well, you know. So there was a fierce variety of stuff, really.
Yeah. Is there an abiding memory, a last abiding memory of Jean? The church bells are ringing again.
When I visited him about 2 weeks before he passed away, we were exceptionally close. It was like saying goodbye to a brother or a parent, talking to Jean that day. His beloved wife, who's still alive, was with him, Maeve. He said to me, you know, he said, there's one good thing you can always get out of life. You can't replace good friends. You can't replace good colleagues. And you can't replace in getting a good kick out of life. And that kind of sums up Jean Mangan very much so.
It's a great story, John, isn't it?
It's a great story, yeah.
Did you buy a car from him as well?
My first 5 cars were from Jean. I remember the first one was a Morris Minor that I was going to France for the 6 or 8 weeks to Brittany cycling. I got the 6 or 8 weeks off from work. He found me a Morris Minor, yeah. I struck away for Brittany.
You brought the Morris Minor over with you?
Well, I did, yeah. Otherwise, sure, you wouldn't be able to go around to the different races in Britain.
So that was the start of your spell in France?
Yes, right, yeah. I was with an Irish team in 69 in the Grand Prix Humanity, yeah. It was the year of the Russians invading Czechoslovakia, like.
Did that impinge on the cycling?
What did you? There's been some fierce battles on the road. If a Russian went up the road, the Poles, the Czechoslovakians, and all the other Eastern countries would chase them, and they wouldn't let them go anywhere.
Yeah,
it was like a World War One.
Was it anything worse than chasing? Like, was there any bumping or?
There'd be a bit of shouldering, and in fairness, there wasn't too many fists drawn. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Well, there would be a small bit, like different times. If it was now, you'd be suspended.
Yeah. Didn't happen then.
Well, it probably did a small bit, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Pa, thanks for talking to me.
Not at all, Frank.
Thanks. And now, To play us out to the 10 o'clock news, a man well known to everybody who knows Killorglin, Declan Mangan, the panto man of so many years, and also a teacher. But during the ceremony marking Jean's life some months ago, Declan wrote a special eulogy. Sing us out with that.
And this is dedicated to my first cousin, Jean Mangan.
Oh.
There's a place in Kerry called Killorglin Town, surrounded by the mountains and the lovely River Loun. Born in the Evra Road was a famous cycling man. One of Ireland's greatest ever was our own Jean Mangan. As a young lad, he got some money to buy a suit he'd like. But Jean had a better idea and bought himself a bike. He showed he was a daredevil who took every challenge he met. He went down to the bridge above the Loun and cycled across the parapet. Jean took to racing bicycles at an early age. On the GAA track and field, his success was on every page. He broke every record in the book over distance or against the clock. Then he turned to the Ross Tolton and gave the top stars a shock.
Oh.
They said he was far too young, he didn't stand a chance. Sure, just a year or two ago, he was still in short pants. In 1955, he set the Ross alive with a style of cycling never seen. Jean had won the yellow jersey before he was 19. Journalists said Jean was so good he could win the Olympic Games. But there was a split in Irish cycling, which really was a shame. Jean went to the Olympics in Rome, but his effort was to fail. Instead of winning gold, he spent the night in the cold in a draughty Roman jail. But Jean's greatest success was in nearby Glenbey. He met the handsome Maeve Doherty, who stole his heart away. They settled down in Orwell Road and raised a family. Niamh Shane, Deirdre Owen and Owen Orla and Colm the baby. Now I've come to the finish of my little song. I have one final wish to make, I know it won't take long. Today we remember a superstar who was cycling's number one. We say well done to Killorglin's most famous son, our own Jean Mangan.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
Welcome back. Today, the very full life of Jean Mangan and his special places in his native Killorglin, guided by another Killorglin cycling legend, John Mangan. The programme was recorded on February the 27th. For later programmes, your story on Jean Mangan or his special places, write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. You can text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-7123-666. In this second hour, on the bank of the Loun, a season cycling in France, crashing the Olympics in Rome, joined by Ross author Tom Daly. On the centre of town, joined by Donal Mangan, talking about cars in Killorglin, and the retirement years with Mary O'Shea in her kitchen. Now the 1958 Ross, Jean's still unequalled four back-to-back stage wins, and his support of Carsevine man Mike Murphy, who won the Ross that year. And to help tell the story, I'm joined by another Killorglin man who's been with us all day, Pat Healy, a leading cyclist in the late 70s and early 80s. He won the Irish Mass Start Championship in 1979 and was named to the Irish squad for the 1980 Moscow Olympics. John, in 1958, you were 9 years old. The Ross and the achievements of Jean and Mike, did they make any impact on you at that time?
No, it didn't really, I suppose, because I wasn't following cyclists.
Despite all the excitement young. In Killorglin.
We wouldn't have seen that, really, because we were up in Beaufort.
A different country.
A different world as well, yeah.
Was it?
It was, yeah.
Pat, in 1958, you were seven. Is there a memory of any impression Mike's win and Jean's 58 achievement made on you at the time?
It was the main talking point in the locality during the race. It was being followed very closely by the adults of the time, but yeah. I didn't really understand what was going on other than listening to the adult conversations.
Indeed. I should have said, by the way, we're now beside the goat at the entrance to Killorglin, on the, I suppose, the northeastern side of the bridge, with the river, as you can hear, flowing in the background. John, nobody else has ever won four consecutive stages in Ross Tolton. Jean's achievement on the final four stages from Tralee to Dublin in 1958. It's a measure of how unique a cyclist he was. Nobody's ever equaled it.
No, he was a great cyclist. But as I was saying earlier on, he had an unbelievable fast finish. If you came to a line with him, the chances are you were not going to win.
His record was never beaten. Chase, amazing records. I mean, four times overall winner, 24 stages, holding 37 yellow jerseys. Pat, it was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah, in Hanlon's case, he won three of the Ross in a row and nobody else wore the jersey for those 3 years.
Nobody at all?
No.
So he won every stage?
No, he didn't win every stage. He held the race lead from 1 year to the other, sat to finish, yeah.
Yeah. John O'Hanlon, did you cycle with him?
Why did you? In the olden days, every Saturday morning when it wasn't the racing season, we'd be out with Jean and McChrystal and all those gang and handling, cycling out to Barton Glass or Blessington and training, yeah. Mm-hmm. We used to do a lot of training, we'll say, from October until the racing season started, the end of February, start of March.
Pat, winning those four stages in a row, put it in context of the huge support he'd given the Ironman Mike Murphy in the Ross that year.
Yeah, considering that the night before the stage from Kilkenny to Clonakilty, he was quite ill. He had bike trouble and he was sick himself. He was advised by Jim Killeen, who was president of the association, that he should really retire from the race, that he was not fit to go on. But he rode anyway, luckily so, because Murphy wanted to lead into Cork because he had a lot of support there. He had serious mechanical trouble and there was no service car. He grabbed a farmer's bike. The poor man was minding his own business, just took off on it. So he rode that for 5 or 6 miles until the car got to him and gave him a spare bike. Well, that's the legend. Next day, there was to Tralee. That was where Murphy's bike gave trouble again and he crashed, injuring himself. Jean this time gave him his bike and lost 5 minutes before he got a bike to replace it. Mm-hmm. He then chased. Murphy got back to the group on the tunnel road out of Glengariff. Jean didn't get back until Killarney, by which time there was one rider had escaped the bunch whom he didn't catch. So again with his old sparring partner, he contested the sprint in Tralee with Steve Abbott. Jean got third on that stage. Mm. Next day, they had to support Murphy. He became dehydrated on the road and couldn't move, so they gave him little hand slings. His team were around. He had a good, solid team. Mm. Eddie Lacey, Dan Ahern, that group. They got brandy from the car anyway. Murphy never drank, so he didn't know what it was, actually. He thought it was some kind of medicine. But it did work.
Yeah.
He revived, and Jean then went ahead, cut the leading break, and won the stage. Each day from there to the finish, once he was sure that Murphy was safe, he went on and won three remaining stages, then four in a row.
Yeah. That kind of support, John, supporting one another, it must be a hard decision in cycling, in that maybe it will affect my chances if I give, like the kind of thing that Jean did in 1958.
I suppose in the olden days it was, whereas now it's totally different because they'd have maybe one or two leaders and they all cycle for the leaders now. Like, but in the olden days it was a big thing, yeah, to leave your chances go and do it for Murphy, for example.
So what Jean did that year was not what would have usually happened then?
It wasn't known.
Pat, it is a measure of the man.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, that would be Jean. Now, he would have known knowledge at that time that he was going to win four stages in a row.
Yeah.
For a brief time, jump back to one little item from the 55 Ross. He did come from England, even though he wasn't in his best form, to win, because when he took the yellow jersey, he had rolls of yellow handlebar tape in his bag to match the jersey that he put on his bars that morning. I forgot to mention that earlier. Yeah. But yeah, back to 58, that was a mark of his generosity. Yeah. And his skill four in a row is remarkable.
Also him as a strategist.
Very much so. If John Blackwell were here, his probably greatest piece of strategy was rigging John Blackwell to beat the great Sir Chris Hoy in his home track in Manchester. It was a marvellous bit of strategy.
John, Mike Murphy won the race, as we've said, in 1958. He really was an iron man.
Well, he was, yeah. Now, several stories were told about him drinking blood from the cows and all that, but that's a fairy tale.
He didn't actually drink blood from the cows, you think?
He could have got it from the butcher, but certainly if he went out in a field, cut the vein in the cow, that had never stopped.
No, you would have.
But Mick heard about those stories from some fellas in Kekistan. 100 years before that, yeah. Mick thought it was a great story, yeah. Mick, I would have known him very well. I used to call him every few weeks for years behind at his house, yeah.
The house was something else, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. He had no windows or doors or the sheets of iron, yeah. Okay. But he was tough.
Even as a cyclist, he was amazing. He continued to do things when most of us couldn't.
Once I was behind in the house in here, I spotted a sacred heart lamp was working. And I said to me, the electricity is working here. Why don't you fix the bulbs or do something like that? I said, if you want to, I'll do it for you. And he said, how will you know? I said, I'm an electrician. He said, I asked the fella 2 years ago and I'm not going to fucking ask him again.
Pat, when you think of Mike Murphy, what comes to mind?
It's a contradiction, really. Murphy was a man of very little education, but he was highly intelligent. One of the things that highlight that is, around about that time, Roger Bannister broke the 4 minute mile, and Murphy wrote to him. He asked for his diet and his schedule of training, and he adapted that to the bike. That was forward thinking.
Even though he gave the impression of being an...
He was not stupid. He was not educated, but he was very clever.
Yeah. Do you think that John drank the blood as well?
I doubt it. We sucked a lot of raw eggs, all right, in the belief that that would make us stronger, but yeah. we would draw the line at drinking the blood, yeah. Indeed.
Supporting another cyclist or being supported, is there an example that stands out for you?
Well, supporting other cyclists was easy for me because the likes of John and Ross would have been a lot stronger than me, so it was a natural thing to rowing behind them.
Mm-hmm. John, when you think of supporting another cyclist or being supported by another cyclist, is there an example that stands out for you?
Oh, there is. I mean, it's a great feeling, more confidence, when you have fellas to back you up. In the 72 Ross, there was a stage into, was it Milltown, Madbury, or one of those things. I was the race leader. You were on the Kerry team. I was in the Setanta team after the previous year's hassle, yeah. We were 7.5 minutes down. And Gene came up to me and he said, you're leaving it very late. There was a group, I think it was at Nulty up the road and things like that, who would have been pretty good. So anyway, I put out the boot and on my own and I caught them a few miles from the finish. But when we got into Killorgan then, Pat and all the lads rolled in behind me and it didn't matter then who tried attacking us.
Yeah.
We were able to play with them, yeah.
What was that division between Setanta and Kerry?
Well, Pat might explain it.
In the 71 Ross, we were very strong. Tactically, the race was bungled and Gene disagreed with what was happening, so he decided to take John under his wing and form a Setanta team. It was a tactic that worked quite well because he ended up with his Setanta team mates were pretty weak, but Kerry had a reasonably strong team, so on the road it made no difference. We were supporting John Mangan, that was no question about that.
Yeah, yeah. So he was a Killorgan man.
Kerry man.
Pat, thank you indeed for talking to us again. We're going to move across.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
The life of Gene Mangan and his special places in Killorgan, guided by another Killorgan cycling legend, John Mangan. Now France and Rome. To give an exotic tone to this stop, we're down on the River Lown in front of the fishery, joined by Tom Daly, the author of the book on Ross Dalton. In preparing for this programme, I talked with Gene's son, Owen, who told me in talking with his father over his final years and in clearing out since he died on the 25th of March of last year, he came across a diary Gene kept, which recorded that during his months in France, he stayed in police stations. Much cheaper, he said, than hostels, and they fed you as well. John, your memory that stands out from your early days in France?
I went there first in 1971 for a few months. I loved France always because there was plenty of races. You could race 5 days a week there.
Tom, in your long conversations with Gene, was there something on his months in France that stands out for you?
Well, his sojourn in France, I suppose, has to be put in context of the situation of cycling in Ireland at the time. There was three cycling federations, and Jean was part of the biggest one, which was not recognised officially in world cycling terms because it was a 32-county organisation, and it wouldn't conform with the requirements that the National Federation would represent the recognised state. So Jean was banned from international competition, as were the likes of John at that particular time, and indeed all the great Kerry cyclists of those eras. So Jean went to France on a false licence, a fake licence.
And a false name.
And a false name. And he campaigned there in southern France and northern Italy for a while, and it was a kind of a precarious existence, and he could have been a bit of an itinerant at the time, which might account for his sojourn in some police stations looking for directions and all of that. But the most remarkable thing about that was that he told me when I was researching the book that the official federation sent someone to kind of expose him or find him, because they couldn't afford a very high profile cyclist getting a kind of an international career when they were in opposition to them. I was a bit sceptical about this at the time because, you know, the idea in the 1950s of sending somebody wandering in France at the time of expense and travelling all that to try and flush out this 19-year-old, I think he might have been a 20, sounded a bit far-fetched. But of course, Jean had great stature and he was very credible. But years later, Jean submitted a lot of his archives to an Irish cycling archive held in DCU libraries. And I saw all the correspondence there from his time in France, including his fake license, and including a fascinating letter from his contact in Spain, who mentioned that he had been contacted by what he called the spy from the Federation of Elliot. That was, of course, the official federation of Shea Elliot, who was looking for him. So there, it was fascinating to see the actual documentary evidence that they had sent someone to put an end to his cycling career in France.
My, John, how difficult did your NCA affiliation make your cycling in France and other countries?
NCA cyclists at the time couldn't take part in the World Championships or Olympic Games or tours. I was lucky, I was able to race with all those fellas except in the big races.
You were still affiliated to NCA at the time, were you?
Well, I was, yeah, but I mean, we'd have known the president in France, friends of mine, and a lot of things had been pushed under the table.
Things that were possible that were impossible.
Correct. If there was a letter came in from anybody, it was into the dustbin. So I was looking, at one stage, then it got a bit rough after a few years once, and they were on to the international body, and I'd done a deal with the federation, the FFC, French Cycling Federation. If they leave me a race, I won't take the money, prize money. We leave it in a pool, and when it sorted out at the end of the year, I got it back.
Tom, the Rome Olympics was the outstanding difficulty for Jean, wasn't it?
Before he went to France cycling, he had experience of another jail in Italy, and that arose from 1955, the World Cycling Championships, when the NCA sent a kind of a protest team, as indeed John Mangan here did in 1972, in other words, to claim their right to represent Ireland. So they were unofficial protest teams trying to infiltrate the race. Now, in Rome at the World Championships, they were apprehended trying to infiltrate the race, so the police were involved, and they ended up being detained in jail for a little while.
My, it was rough, it was rough. By 1959, Jean was moving on from France, a demanding job with Allied Irish Finance, married to Maeve O'Doherty from Glenbey in 1960. Six children, riding as an independent. After 6 months, he had a bad fall. He was, I think, appalled or amazed by the whole drug scene with syringes out of people's pockets. Jean came home. John, during your 6 or 7 years cycling in France as an amateur, you made a lot of money.
I spent 14 years there.
14 years there?
Yeah, nothing in comparison to what they're making now. Like, well, it was, I built my house from it in here. Like,
so it was profitable?
It was, yeah. I had just qualified as an electrician, and the electrician's wage at the time was £28 a week.
Yeah.
And there were weekends I used to be making £600.
You're talking about the late 60s?
1972, 73 and 74, yeah.
A lot of money then?
It was great money altogether, yeah.
So no wonder you stayed on.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. And I loved the life there as well, yeah.
Why? What was it about it?
French people took to me because as you know, in those days, there was always a mafia in the cycling, and I was a foreigner, and I'd be taking them on. Like.
So you were attracting a lot of attention as well then?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Tom, making a lot of money as an amateur.
There was no money in Irish cycling anyway, John, that's for sure. But talking about making money, like just in the context of the time, of Gene's time,
yeah.
Gene immigrated after winning the 55 Ross. And the other two Ross winners of the 50s, Paddy Fitzgerald and McMurphy, of course, also immigrated. So that just puts the period in context. Gene went to London, and I think he worked in finance or something like that. The fallout from the events in Italy at the World Championships, where he came to know the police there, that was part of his reason for having to leave England and encourage him to come back to Ireland, thankfully for all of us.
Yeah. John, you stayed on, arriving home, driving a Mercedes. You chose a very different path.
I was making a bit of money, as they say, yeah. That's why we actually stayed on, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, electricians' wages were £28, and we were making £600 or £700 the weekend.
Were you worried? Gene talked about the drug scene even at that stage, and seeing people taking things out of their pockets.
In every sport, there's drugs, yeah. And I mean,
but cycling had a particularly bad name for a long time.
It had a bad name, all right, yeah. It was tidied up a bit after 67 when Tom Simpson died in Mont Ventoux, yeah. They were stricter. There was one stage we were racing with Finian and Bernard Dion, those lads. It was a big classic in May in France. I was 4 times second, and I thought, well, I sold the race 3 times.
Anyway, you sold the race 3 times?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Bernard Dion wanted it once that he could pass professional if he won it.
Yeah.
So he won it, and another time the famous fella Andre Fouché, I left him win it twice.
They were paying you to do this?
Oh, they would, yeah.
Yeah? Worth a lot of money.
In those days, to me, as I always said, it was a day's work.
Yeah.
That's why I never kept nothing. It would be like if I was working here as an electrician, I wouldn't be taking photographs of where you're working.
And you're,
I'm sorry now.
You're talking about people there who went on to win the Tour de France.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
We used to race with Hino and all those fellas, yeah.
Yeah.
Even there a few years ago, I go hunting with Hino, yeah.
All right.
A shooting in France, yeah.
So you still keep up contact with them?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Yeah.
As I say, I love France.
What is it you love about France?
The people. And then they're famous for their foods and their wines and all that, yeah. So, I mean, I'd be very, very much into the wines, yeah.
Mm.
And the cheeses and all those things, yeah.
The good life.
The good life, yeah.
The good life. Tom, Gene, in the 1950s, as we were saying earlier in the programme, generated a level of excitement not achieved again in cycling until the advent of Sean Kelly and Nicholas Roach. In your research on the Ross and so on, you reflect all of that very well.
Well, I suppose it's hard now for people to comprehend how big Gene Mangan was and how the Ross was. Gene was lucky in a way because the rise of the Ross coincided with the rise in his career, and he was really one of the first superstars of road racing in Ireland. The old photographs like will show people 4 or 5 deep at the stage ends. I suppose the biggest kind of reflection we could put on it was that in 1955 there was a famous Kerry victory against Dublin in Croke Park in the All Ireland. Yet that year, Gene Mangan won the Bishop Moynihan Trophy, which was effectively the Kerry Sports Person of the Year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, he would have been bigger than the biggest Kerry footballing star at the time. Yeah,
yeah. He won the Celtics Award, I think, that year as well, didn't he?
The Celtics Award was the National Sports Star of the Year, effectively, yeah. So Gene, like, he suited the media era as well because he had that bit of a superstar gatch about him, you know. He was a good talker, great raconteur, looked well, acted very professionally. He always was terribly professional in his outlook and approach to cycling.
Mm.
That would have helped as well, of course.
Mm. How would you sum him up?
I'd like to sum Gene up apart from cycling altogether. Gene was a great character, hugely respected, integrity, honesty, fairness. One of these persons that people look up to.
Tom, thanks for talking to us.
You're welcome.
I thanks. Want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
the many facets of Jean Mangan and his special places in Killorglin, guided by Jean's friend, fellow biker and distant cousin, John Mangan. Programme recorded on February 27th. Your story on Jean and his special places. You can text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 71 236 66. Now, Jean, as a source of cars for Killorglin, we were to be in the centre of town, but it's raining, so we're still at the fishery, but we're undercover. I'm joined by Jean's cousin and friend, Donal Mangan. Donal, Jean is a supplier of cars in Killorglin. We talked about it already, but have you a personal experience?
Whenever I wanted a car, I would contact Jean.
Yeah.
And he would ask me, what type of car do I want? And I would say, 8,000.
The price.
What type of a car do you want? 8,000. What colour do you want? 8,000. And he would say, I have. Would you get somebody to have a look at it?
Yeah.
Yes, I had a son in Dublin, Diarmuid, and he went out and he looked at the car and he rang my wife, his mother, and he said, Mother, a beautiful car. It will be wasted on your husband.
So did you not take the car then?
No, it was within the bracket. It was 8,000.
So you bought it?
I did, yeah. Anything that Jean would recommend,
and,
I bought.
And did you think it was wasted on you?
Any car to me was to get me from A to B. Okay. I still, in our family, we have a car.
Yeah.
01D737.
Yeah.
A red coupe car. 01D. Yeah. And it is still in the family, okay? And when the person was looking for it, she described what she wanted. And Jean said, hold on. He said, that's a very flashy car. No. And Jean got on to me, does she really want it? I said, Jean, you should listen to women. When they want something, they want it. And it was bought, and it's still in the family.
Very good, very good. John, do you remember that time that you drove a Mercedes into Killorglin?
I do, well, yeah. It was 1976. We were making nice money, and I went away and I bought one of them, yeah.
It must have made quite an impact here.
A lot of fellas had been saying at the time, oh, that's not his at all, yeah. He borrowed it for the photos. Yeah. Even there were two shopkeepers in town, even said that, yeah, that he borrowed it for the photos, and then the pioneer decided back again, so that knocked that in the head.
Did you know he was involved in the Falklands?
I didn't. What was his involvement in the Falklands?
There was a fellow by the name of Jim Mansfield.
Yeah.
Who went to Allied Irish Financier, Allied Irish, and he got money to buy the equipment that was used in the Falklands, machinery, etc., etc.
What was it put into the bikers and into the bookers?
£1 million. Jean was involved in the getting the money from Mansfield.
Yeah, my gosh.
Everything went well, and Mansfield, on his way back from the Falklands, the machinery was taken into the custody of an Arab, and they were not willing to release the machinery.
Yeah.
AIB had £1 million involved, and Jean was delegated to go out and deal with the Arabs and get the machinery released. That was his connection with the Falklands.
He was successful, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
When he was in the High Purchase Company of Ireland and AIF, Allied Irish Finance, he knew who to lend that he'd get the money back. Yeah. Normally, he'd get it back like a... Yeah. I was talking to a fella the other day, I can't mention his name now, and he said, like, well, you get the money from Jean, no problem. He says, but by God, if we didn't pay it back, he'd be to the house, yeah.
Oh, yeah? As a businessman, an importer of wood and so on, were you dealing with Jean
banker? No. He wouldn't be lending money to lads who'd be involved in sawmills and all that, yeah. Yeah. That's more friend the wise we used to deal with, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they used to buy shiploads of timber from us.
Donald, we've talked about it again throughout the programme. Jean, as a cyclist.
Jean would come to Killorglin quite often. He had a friend with a very good cyclist, Shay O'Hanlon. Shay came down, he was staying with Jean, and they came down one morning to Zest.
and they went in above to Zest, the cafe. Mm-hmm. And Podge Foley, our councillor now, welcomed Jean. Jean, you're the second most famous cyclist from Killarney.
Go on.
And Jean was taken a bit aback because Shea Hanlon was a very famous cyclist, and Jean would have regarded maybe that Podge was wrong. And the following morning, Jean came down and he said to Podge, "Podge, what did you mean that I was the second most famous cyclist in Kerala?
Yeah.
Who is the most famous?" "Nora Looney, the local postmistress, who cycled for charity." He told me that story himself. He had humour.
Yeah.
And he was very, very loyal to people. He was loyal to Killarney, yeah. Anyone from Killarney who needed a hand and he thought was worthy of it, he would support them.
Mm-hmm. As John was saying there a minute ago, he'd follow the money as well, though. If, as a banker, made an agreement with you and you didn't come up with the shillings, he'd call to the door.
As I said, in modern day language, he was wired different. He had many different facets.
Yeah.
He was a storyteller. He had great capacity to spin a yarn.
Yeah.
And when he would be coming to Killarney, his wife, Maeve, would say, "Jean, if you're telling a story, would you look at the people and make sure that you haven't told them that story before with a different twist?"
As you were saying earlier, John, I mean, Jean, in many ways, his greatest cycling achievements were field events and track events for which the general public didn't know.
Here in Kerry, a lot of it would have been in the Fitzgerald Stadium inside, yeah. They used to do a lot of track there, and Beckinsale, you had probably named John Gallivan as well, he was another trackie, and you had a few of them around Tralee as well, like, yeah. And then when he went to Dublin, it was mostly on the Emer Kent.
Yeah.
Tarmac.
Donald, Gina, as a friend,
when he'd come to Killarney, he would come into my home, and I had a large family. When they would see him coming, they would gather in the living room, they would sit in the floor, and they would listen to him telling stories. Mm-hmm. And invariably, he'd have a box of sweets. And they would remember him, "Is the man with the sweets coming again?" My mother-in-law was down with us, and she was from Listry. And Jean observed that she had no interest in what he was saying. And then he said, "I've been to very few football matches, but the last football match I was at was between Killarney and Listry."
Yeah.
"And they were the roughest, uncouth players that I ever saw." And immediately my mother-in-law shifted from where she was and wanted to know, what did he know about Listry? So he was a great man to grasp and get hold of an audience. As an individual, I would know that he had no problem in coming to the aid of people who needed it. Yeah. And he stuck with them. He was consistent.
Fantastic. John, can I put the same question to you? When you think of Jean as a friend...
He certainly helped me a lot in Dublin and things like that, finding a job and digs and all that sort of thing. In 1970, I had no car at the time, so he used to let me use Maeve's car to go to races up in Drogheda and things like that on the Sundays, because he wouldn't be going up racing himself like him.
Gosh. So it continued. And I mean, to both of you, he continued to call to you in his retirement years.
Well, would, yeah. Before he died, I called to actually see him, yeah. But he was very, very weak then, like, yeah. He couldn't even lift his head, like, yeah.
Right.
Because he asked me to lift his head for him, yeah, and to put him in a different position, yeah.
Yeah, my.
So it was, I suppose, to actually see a fella gone down to that stage from the days of racing.
Yeah.
But that's life.
It is. You know, a friend and a fellow Killarney man from school days, or before school days even, maybe, to the final part of his life.
He was different to most people that I knew. He had sayings.
somebody was worried why somebody had died, and he had a phrase, the reason died with them. That was a kind of a very simple statement,
yeah.
But it said the world. He was a wise man,
yeah.
Gene.
Yeah.
He had humour.
Yeah. Donald, thanks indeed for talking to us.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
I want to ride my bicycle, I want to ride my bike.
The many sides of Gene Mangan and his special places, all, of course, in Killoglan, carefully guided by fellow Killoglan cycling great John Mangan. Now our last stop, we're in Mary O'Shea's kitchen in Lower Bridge Street, joined by Mary, who with her late husband, Jackie, were great friends of Gene's. Mary, you were telling me the other day when we were talking on the phone, when you and Jackie were going out dancing or wherever, Gene was always with you. You weren't trying to make up your mind between Gene or Jackie.
No. But he was really with him. He was so fond of Jackie. They were always together everywhere.
Yeah. You were saying to me there just before we started that you knew Gene for 75 years.
That's right, yeah.
Do you remember an early memory of him?
I do. Lots of memories of going with Jackie. We go into the dances and things like that.
Yeah.
That time
so who did you dance with?
Jackie. But Gene wasn't a great dancer.
Oh, you know?
We went to the, you know, the Eimear and the O'Sheen and all those with the lovely bands that time. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And then we got married and Gene was at our wedding in Carrick. We had a lovely hotel in Carrick that time, I suppose you remember.
Right. Yeah. Up to his 80th birthday, Gene was cycling the Cremorne, Dukes, Carrick. He used to call to Eileen and John Scully in Beaufort. John, it's also your experience. All cyclists never die. They cycle into the sunset, do they?
They just fade away. That's what happened to Gene too as well. He just faded away, like, yeah.
Yeah. This morning, when we were out recording, while the weather was fine, you have a bad flu on you. And
that's right. We're shaking like an eve.
Most of us would have stayed at home in bed, but you came out.
Yeah.
And we appreciate that tremendously.
No problem, yeah.
Mary, how far back can you go as a story of the first time you met Gene?
He was always with Jackie, like, I don't know how they were so attached to one another. I suppose it was the bicycles, really. Do you know Jackie had the bicycle shop?
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Gene was into bicycling in a big way.
Yeah.
And then he was, Gene was very a good friend to us. He even designed this house.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. After Jackie had a side part when we got married. The house would be Gene designed it, and he did a good job in it.
I did.
He's a plan of the house. He was very gifted.
Mary, Gene bought a bicycle. Tell me about that.
Cork border, I think. Yeah. Himself and Jackie went off. They bought the bicycle anyway, and Jackie had the car. So Jackie was opening the boot to put the bicycle into the car, and the next thing, Gene jumped up on the bicycle, and off he went. They said there was no brakes in it or something. And Jackie drove behind him all the way here to Killoglan.
My gosh. So was that a fixed wheel bicycle then, was it?
Lots of people had a fixed wheel, yeah. In other words, there was no brakes.
There was no brakes.
You actually stopped it by pedalling backwards, trying to pedal backwards in the other. All the bikes on the track at the time, there was no gears, or no brakes or nothing, yeah. They were all fixed wheel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Normally 82 or 86 inch for each pedal, yeah.
Dangerous bikes, though, to be cycling.
On the main road.
Yeah.
You couldn't do it now. You'd be falling because of so many bloody potholes and everything.
Yeah. You couldn't stop suddenly. I mean,
no.
If you tried to, you'd probably brain yourself.
You'd be on the ground.
John, Killoglan should have a major interactive centre on cycling, using the most advanced modern technology, honouring so many cycling achievements, and a major memorial to Gene, so that all of his fine qualities might inspire Killoglan people now and into the future. Paddy O'Callaghan talked to me often about the thought of having an indoor cycling track up beside the community college here in Killoglan. That didn't happen at the time. With the huge cycling story here, it is something that should be marked.
Well, it'd be lovely if they had something like that.
What's your worst experience on a bike?
when I really woke up in hospital. I fractured my skull there in two places, and I had 48 stitches in the head, yeah.
What happened?
It was the month of August in Brittany, and just before the season finished, maybe there was another 4 or 5 weeks left. We were cycling along after only about 5 or 6 miles, and it was a very warm day, so no one was interested in racing too hard at the start anyway. So we were all talking away. I had my hands on top of the handlebars, and a fella fell in front of me, and I went out over him, and a bang into his back wheel, and there the doctor, he was a very good fellow, he was interested in cycling, so he stitched up my nose and everything. He said, if I was a boozer, he'd put one stitch here and one stitch there. I'd be marked for life.
Yeah.
But he said, you were a sportsman. He said, we'd do our very best. Yeah. He used to go down to Spain for the bullfighting and all that, yeah.
You used?
No, he used.
Yeah.
He was a specialist doctor, yeah.
Right. Cost a couple of bob, I'm sure, to have all that done.
No, it didn't. The insurance of the race paid for all that. Every organiser has to have insurance, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So if anything happens during the race, it's paid by the organisers.
What's the memory of Jean particularly that stands out for you?
There are so many.
Yeah.
He was life of the party, like wherever he was. You couldn't stop him talking. He'd talk and talk, talk for all Ireland.
Yeah.
And he was a great friend, really. And any time he came to Killoglan, he came in, he'd sit down there and have a cup of coffee, and we'd be talking for an hour or more.
Yeah.
And when he was in Dublin, then he'd often ring me on the phone, and he'd do all the talking nearly. He'd be chatting and chatting, but that's the kind he was like, you know. Yeah. He adored his wife and his family. Yeah. He talked about them. His wife, Maeve, lovely lady, and his sons and daughters, that's all you would hear about. And he was very proud of them all, really.
Yeah.
And he and his grandchildren, and of course, growing up,
yeah.
He was really attached and proud of them, you know.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
never tired of talking about them anyway.
The commitment looked for at the top of any sport now is so huge.
Well, it's unreal, yeah. In our day, all we'd done was eat, dream, cycling, yeah.
Yeah, that was everything.
Eat, dream and sleep.
Mary, you heard all the stories about cycling as well, presumably.
Jean would breeze into the bicycle shop, of course, when he was around, and it was like a breath of fresh air. He was all full of the joys of life, always. Jackie was a very kind of relaxed human being, you know. Yeah. He was cool and relaxed, whereas Jean was the opposite, I suppose, maybe. I was ever so friendly.
Yeah.
And he, with Jackie right up until the very end of his life, even, you know, Jackie got a heart attack. So in intensive care for a week, and then he came out, and he was out in the ward, and he was doing great.
Yeah.
He had lots of visitors, and of course, Jean was one of them. I visited him. He said he was so glad he visited him. And the doctor, our local doctor, Billy Prendle, let him. I asked him what happens now, and he said, Jackie's have to go to Dublin. And he said, was not at the moment. So Jean, Mr. Nelligan was the heart specialist that day. And I said it to Jean, and Jean had a friend that was a friend of Mr. Nelligan's. And he met his friend, and he said, I'll be looking for an appointment with Mr. Nelligan for a friend of mine shortly. And he said, no problem. So he said the next thing, anyway, he met him, when Jean met his friend again, he said, when do you want that appointment for your friend? And he said, I'm after coming from his funeral.
I think Owen had a conversation with him about dying, and he always said that he wasn't afraid of dying, that he looked forward to meeting
his friends,
Jackie, and all the bikers in heaven.
Wasn't that nice?
Wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe he said in the interview he did for the archives that Jackie was his best friend.
Yeah, isn't that nice? It's nice to be able to regard life like that, John, isn't it? Not to be worried about dying.
That's nice, right? Yeah, well, we all have to die, so I suppose it's a case of probably when you're going into poor health, you'll accept it much easier, yeah. If you're young and in good health, you won't accept it, yeah.
You don't expect to die.
No. You expect to live forever.
Yeah. You saw Pat Spillane on with the television there last week, and again,
that's right, yeah.
He was asked the same question. He gave the same answer. He said that, you know, he had no fear of dying, that he looked forward to meeting his parents and meeting his friends.
Correct,
again.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
Yeah.
I suppose if you've lived a good life, and clearly from all that we've heard this morning, Jean lived a good life, so why would he be afraid of dying?
Yeah. Well, he had a great life, yeah. And he had loads of friends.
Sorry, Mary.
Very, like John said there, you know, he was very helpful to people from Killoglan when they went to Dublin. Anything he could do for them, he would do it.
Yeah. So when he died on the 25th of March of 2025, he was well received at the far side.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I really would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary, thanks indeed for talking to me.
That's all, yeah.
The many sides of Jean Mangan, proudest achievement, I suppose, if he were asked, would be marriage to Maeve O'Doherty from Glenbey. Had a family of six, Niamh, Tiana, Deirdre, Owen, Orla and Cullum. Open house for bikers and for friends from Killoglan. First and last, he was a Killoglan man. A lifelong, fierce loyalty to friends. At 18, in 1955, the youngest ever winner of the Ross. A string of successes on road and track. Senior executive with Allied Irish Finance, provider of cars for anybody from Killoglan. Special thanks to John Mangan, a man whose story should be told, and we'd have to come back and tell that in more detail. The idea of today's programme emerged on a conversation with Sean O'Callaghan, who made the first contacts. Pat Healy was the best helper. Jill Mangan and Jean's son Owen gave special insights. Thanks to all of those who were part of the programme. Location sound and programme coordination, Siobhan Lewis. Post-production, Brendan Lewis. For me, Frank Lewis. Until the last Saturday in April, the Dawn Chorus. From a place I had not imagined up to a few months ago. A wooded place by a great river with a unique herd, rich history and folklore. Until then, don't miss a minute of the emerging miracles that make spring. Thanks for your company. Pat Kelly will be with you after the news.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
You say black.
I say white.
You say bar.
I say bite.
You say shark.
I say him and yours was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars.
You say Rose.
I say Royce.
You say God.
Give me a choice.
Say Lord.
I say Christ. I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein or Superman.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.